Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, I hear you back there. There's only one host on this show. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It's Called Action Radio. Thanks for being here. Theology Thursday, and my original guest. Now, I could over spiritualize this and say that God struck down Danny Akin with the flu in order to make room for my other incredibly educated and witty and smart friend, Dr. Bruce Ashford. But that might be stretching it. Bruce, I mean, as one of the bigwigs here at Southeastern Baptist, are you comfortable with what I just did, or is that somewhat...
Listen, man.
Uncomfortable.
When the president went down with the flu, man, it threw us all for a loop. So
yeah, because he's a busy dude.
He told me, he said, listen, if you're going to fill in on Steve Noble's radio show, please don't mess it up.
Really? Was that a text?
No.
He is. I mean, I'm going to give you this. I'll give Danny Akin these props. I've always done this for the 4+ years that we've been doing Theology Thursday. But for being as busy in the Southern Baptist world, especially as prominent as he is, but as busy as he is, he returns text messages and emails remarkably quick. I mean, I'll do it as an experiment every once in a while. I'll say, let me just show you this, and I'll text him something. I've done it where I just count.
Oh, he's a beast. It's like Young Guns.
It's like, boom, and there it is. I'm like, holy, dude, I know you've got other stuff to do, except answer my stupid question. But there it is. I don't know what drives him, but it's pretty awesome.
Listen, when Steve Noble contacts us.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Listen.
Yeah, listen. Steve who? Anyway, it's great to see you. I appreciate you being here, especially on short notice. But this was something we were going to do in the future, but now we're pulling it into the present because God just offered this up for us. So Bruce Ashford, of course, is out here at Southeastern and serves in a number of different capacities. But God, and I'm going to talk about this because I want to talk about Bruce Ashford, Kazan. Is it Kazan or Kazan?
Kazan.
Kazan, Russia, in American politics. So I'm going to, why does this guy that's, Mr. Theology and a PhD level theologian and a professor and all that kind of stuff at a major Southern Baptist seminary have this really insatiable appetite to talk about politics and culture and the kind of the clash between politics and our Christianity. In reading some things from your new book, which isn't out yet, but it's going to be out soon. So I've got links to it up today, Letters to an American Christian, which is coming out probably the beginning of the summer, maybe around the beginning of June. How did this happen and what does Russia have to do with it? I never really made that connection before until I started reading this book, which is excellent, by the way.
Yeah, growing up, I always sort of wondered if Jesus was Lord over everything, then how would I relate Jesus to everything, including politics?
Yeah, literally.
I knew how he related to my devotional life,
sure,
or whatever, but what about politics? Well, I go to live in Russia, and I live in a city, the city of Kazan, which is about half Muslim and half atheist.
Wow.
And so every time I, encountered somebody else, they viewed the world very differently than me. And I watched the sort of their public life and their political parties and political debates. And it was just very unsettling for me because I didn't know how to adjudicate it.
Yeah.
And so I began to read everything I could get my hands on, Abraham Kuyper and some of these other theologians who wrote on political issues, and came back to the States as a sort of a personal mission to explore that and really to explore this. What does it mean for a Christian to bring Christian principles into an interface with politics and public life and not to let secular parties or secular outlets be the primary shapers of my politics?
I was talking to a guy that handles programming for a 32-station network of Christian stations that we're going to start talking about this show showing up there. And we were talking about this earlier today, and he said flat out, I was kind of explaining to him my background being kind of a political animal like I was and an activist, and then how God kind of started to change my message. I'm no less conservative than I was 10 years ago about the fall off the flat earth to the right. But then kind of integrating your faith and how do you come at this, not as a good American, but as a good Christian who happens to live in America. And this guy who's been around Christian radio for years is like, yeah, you know what, Steve? I really struggle with this. How do I deal with my conservative bent politically and my allegiance to Jesus Christ and what I know of God's word and how do I interact with the culture and the political world? Because especially as we've seen in the last election, man, it's really caused, I think, a lot of problems. And I think a lot of us are guilty of political idolatry. And if you even bring that up, they go, what are you getting soft, Steve? You turning into a liberal? Well, if you listen to this show for more than 30 minutes, you know, that's not true.
You are farther to the right than a tricycle on the Autobahn.
Wow, that's pretty good. Like, where did that even come from?
You are farther to the right than Sam Donaldson's part. Those of a certain age will remember Sam Donaldson's
part's about on his right elbow. I mean, listen, I'm like, how did you do that? Listen, why even bother?
That's one of the best comb-overs ever, and it was nationally televised
yes,
every day.
And nobody said anything until now. That's why I appreciate your honesty. But it seems to me like that is unfortunately not an issue for a lot of Christians, but it should be an issue for every Christian.
Yeah, it should be, you know, and when I was there in Kazan, so I've always been conservative, you know, I've in college Republicans, ran for student government at a very conservative, politically conservative university. But when I was there in Kazan, just pounding down mugs of hot tea, because that's what real men drink in Russia, at least, you know, pounded down mugs of hot tea with two scoops of sugar and a slice of lemon, you know, and talking with these guys, that's where I began to figure out how it is that we bring the gospel into an interface with politics. And this book sort of comes out of this because Russia at that time, you know, I was teaching at universities. I was a 24-year-old teaching conversational English to secular Russians, mostly secular Russians. Wow. Even the Muslims are kind of secular. And they were, I think, about 20 years ahead of the U.S., which means we are in America right now, as I see it, where Russia was 20 years ago.
That's a salacious statement.
Secularization process.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's definitely true.
And, you know, I think, you know, I wrote this book. Here's why. In the book, I am writing letters to an imaginary college student named Christian. Christian is going to DuPont University. That's a fake university. And he's double majoring in political science and journalism. In the political science department, there are something like 40 Democrats and one Republican. You know, that's the diversity we haven't offered our Ivy League schools, public universities. And his parents are far right in a bad sense of the word. You know, some of the aberrations and toxic parts of the
obnoxious,
right that we've got.
Yeah, I got it.
And so he's just become a Christian, and I'm coaching him because he realizes that he's got to reposition his political views. He used to lean left, kind of against his parents, and now I'm helping him think through that.
Yeah, and that's the beauty about this. I think we tend to think as Christians, and mostly most of us listening to the show are conservative Christians, we tend to think very binary. It's either right or left or you're out. It's a little more nuanced than that. We'll get to that when we come back with Dr. Bruce Ashford. Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. My good friend, Dr. Bruce Ashford, back in the house, who's got another excellent book coming out. And we talked about his last book, One Nation Under God, previously, which is wonderful. This one, I think it's the best thing you've written. This is a wonderful, it's an entertaining book because of the form that it takes in terms of these letters to a young man named Christian. How apropos. We're going to talk about that and why Bruce decided to do it that way. But really kind of a global view of Christianity in America and in a political context, and then issue by issue in forms of a letter. So oftentimes these books, and I've read a lot of them and been down a lot of these roads myself, are either way too much on the street level, and they don't have enough theological oomph behind them. They don't have enough research behind them. That's just it's kind of cotton candy, or it's just ivory tower stuff. And which you smart people up here at the seminary can read each other's things and it makes perfect sense. And I'm like, I can't get past page 3 because I don't have enough time to get into my dictionary and my all the other things that are going to help me understand these. But you do a great job in Letters to an American Christian of kind of meeting in the middle. And I love the fact that you wrote it in letter form. Why did you do that? And it's kind of a C.S. Lewis Screwtape letter kind of thing. It's what it
you know,
reminds me of.
Well, I don't know if you'll like my answer. There's two reasons.
It doesn't matter if I like your answer. Well, your answer is your answer.
The first reason you'll be okay with, you know, I want to write for everyday Americans, not for seminary people.
Amen.
Per se, right? And so I think a letter format is a great way to do it. It allows me to make jokes, cultural references. It personalizes
like the
it.
Sam Donaldson line.
Yeah, really short chapters. But the second reason is years ago, I read Dinesh D'Souza's book, Letters to a Young Conservative.
Oh,
and
go.
When I read it, I thought this is a really powerful way of communicating. Now, he was a, a big jerk in the book, and I try not to be a big jerk in mine. Yeah. And my book is very different from his in some ways, but I thought that was helpful. And so I wrote these chapters as if I were writing a Fox Opinion piece. I write for Fox Opinion and the Daily Signal for Heritage. And these letters are in the same vein, but a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You know, jokes, cultural references. Right. I get to, you know, I get to poke fun at this college student's secular progressive professors, his idiot uncle that I've created.
Yeah, the whole nine.
You know, it's more fun than a barrel of drunk monkeys.
Yeah, there you go. So, and it is a lot of fun. It makes it a light-hearted read in that way. But it also isn't. It's very meaty. There's a lot of chapters, but they're very short. And really, this whole thing, and I'm reading from something on Amazon, and just go to Letters to an American Christian. It'll come out officially right around the 1st of June. But here's a little line on there, which I think really captures it well. You sent it to me earlier today. I've gotten through about 8 or 9 chapters. In the midst of a rapidly changing national and political landscape, Letters to an American Christian reminds us of two important truths. We cannot afford to shrink away from our earthly citizenship. That's your politics. And we cannot afford to lose sight of our heavenly citizenship. That's your theology. And so now we're in a situation where I think we've been blindly conservative for years. And now we have to fold into it good theology to then help us down these roads, whether it's illegal immigration or gun control, because not every issue is as simple as life or as marriage, things like that. I think we can make a biblical case that most nobody would ever really disagree with or even struggle to come up with themselves on most of those issues. But on a lot of other issues, you can't. And I think we're guilty largely as Christians in America, conservative Christians, of political idolatry.
Mm.
What I say now is, politics is important, but the gospel's preeminent. But so, people say, well, it's either, hey, you got to be a conservative Republican or you're a bad Christian. Or I'm not going to get involved with politics because Christians shouldn't be there at all. And you go, well, no, it's not quite as black and white as that.
Yeah, it's not at all. You know, in the book, the very first letter this kid writes to me, this college student, and it's similar to a letter that I actually received from a college student. A lot of these are. I play off of my correspondence. And his left-leaning professor has told him that religion has no place in the public square. Many people on the left and some people on the right believe that. And the point we make, a very liberal professor at Harvard, John Rawls, he's passed away now. He made it his life's business to make that argument. And we argue that religion does have its place in the public square, appropriately. And then you've got some Christians that say that politics isn't worth our time. And so in a separate letter, I deal with that.
Yeah, because they'll say Jesus wasn't political.
Yeah, we can't imagine Jesus rolling up at the voting booth with a GOP or DNC sticker on his car.
Which is the first chapter I read, chapter 3, Jesus is Lord and Congress is not, which deals with that when he says the gospel has little or nothing to do with politics.
Listen,
and that's just stupid.
I mean,
a lie.
Yeah, that's dumb on so many levels. You know that view. Sometimes on my worst days, I want to say, "Listen, you know, if you're any dumber, we'd have to water you twice a week." But that's nice. We don't want to have that sort of public deportment. No, Jesus is king. He's a cosmic king. That is political terminology. And one day he will return to set the world to rights, and he will establish a one-world government and a one-party system with him as the king. That's very political. And our primary political identity is Christian. Not Republican, not Democrat, not Libertarian, not conservative, none of those. It's Christian. And, you know, our local church involvement is political, not in the way people might think.
Right, expressly.
It's not that local churches are public policy think tanks. They're not. Shouldn't be. God hasn't called them to be that. But the local church is where we gather to hear a sermon and take the Lord's Supper and to remind ourselves that we are His. We're owned by Him. And so that sort of, to use a workout analogy, builds our core muscles, our core political muscles. So it reminds us you are first and foremost a Christian. So when you approach the way you think about anything politically, you approach as a Christian.
That's why I never say I'm an American Christian. I always say I'm a follower of Jesus Christ who happens to have been born and live and be raised and live in the United States of America. And I love my country, but I don't idolize it anymore. And I love my country, but I don't look at it blindly. I mean,
yeah,
I don't have red, white, and blue colored glasses. I mean, my glasses are scripture.
And the best way to love our country is to help it
Amen.
When it goes off the rails, right? So that means we have to be critical. Critical because we care. Same way we are with our kids, right? When our kids get off the track, I had to do that with my kid yesterday, my son. I had to confiscate all of his stuffed animals. He wept like a dying man.
I saw that on Facebook.
And, I mean, it was brutal. And, you know, and it actually hurt a little bit because it really hurt him. I mean, he loves those little things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's because I love him. Same thing with our country. You know, so,
Well, I think, and you mentioned this in that same chapter, we're talking about Letters to an American Christian. You're talking about Martin Luther King Jr. And you wrote about that on MLK Day just recently, and I did a whole show on MLK, and a lot of, and there, you can go a lot of different directions there, and I have some problems with his theology, but he did, I think he's an excellent example, if not the best example in the last 100 years, of Christianity of informing and then driving your engagement of the political process.
Yeah, you know what I appreciate about him? There's some things to criticize, and I mentioned those in an article I wrote, you know, a week or two ago. But, you know, he did, it was his Christianity that caused him to protest against bad treatment of blacks. And it was also his Christianity that caused him to do it in a nonviolent manner.
Yeah.
Right? Respect for the rule of law. And so I really appreciated that. William Wilberforce is another example in England, who stood up against the slave trade there and is, I think, a powerful example of Christian political involvement. And, you know, the church is both an organization and an organism, if I could put it this way. As an organization, we meet on Sundays.
Right, we gather.
And our political identity is nourished, children of the King. But then we disperse on Monday through Saturday,
and scatter.
That's a church as an organism.
Right.
We're connected to each other and to Christ. We don't become disconnected from Christ when we leave the halls of the church. And it's the church as an organization that prepares us to go out and be ambassadors of the King Monday through Saturday.
Right. Which would include being an ambassador in our own country. And we're going to talk about that. Several of these other chapters we're going to get into. It's really a great read. I just started reading it today. I guarantee you I'll finish it by Monday because it's just really pulled me in. It's really well written. And Letters to an American Christian to a Young College Student. And Bruce Ashford is the author and also out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. This is Steve Noble on Call to Action. We'll be right back. Wouldn't it be nice if, like, once a week you got a letter from a really encouraging and really well-read and highly educated Christian theologian who also understood cultural issues of the day and politics, and he's just kind of walking you down the road on kind of big ideas of Christianity and its place in politics and how you're to live out your Christianity in America. Then you get into the individual issues of the day. And so you're getting these letters once a week, and whether it's we're going to talk about religious liberty or you're going to talk about the value of free speech or a woman's quote-unquote right to choose or even some things like the Black Lives Matter movement, political correctness, small government versus big government. And every week you get one of these letters. That would be a pretty awesome thing. Well, now you don't have to wait for a letter every week. You just have to wait for a couple of months because the book is in kind of pre-sale on Amazon right now. It's called Letters to an American Christian, written by my friend Dr. Bruce Ashford. Will it be available around June 1st? But you can pre-order it now on Amazon, Letters to an American Christian, and I've got the links up on the Facebook page, facebook.com/C2A Radio, or that link's probably on your webpage, isn't it, where you have your blog and everything?
Not yet.
Because that's contractual and all kinds of rules and stuff like that. I'm probably getting
trouble. It'll happen soon.
Okay, and your website is?
My website is bruceashford.net. Do not go to bruceashford.com. As I always say, you will reach an accountant in Portland, Oregon, who hasn't updated his website in 25 years.
So not nearly as much fun.
You will not find letters from a Christian American. You will find postings from a mid-1980s accountant.
Do you think his I think I'd be willing to bet, and I'm not usually a betting man, that his part would be as far to the right as Sam Donaldson's.
I know it might be more along the lines of maybe Hannity. Hannity's part is not that far on the right. I've always admired it. It's a solid part. It's
he's got a thick dude though.
He's got that's what I'm going to say. I mean, his part looks like Jesus. Moses parted the waters
exactly
of the
right.
Red Sea.
And I think back in the day, somebody like Don Imus might have referred to him as a nappy headed something or another. Remember that whole mess.
A bunch of my students actually just took Hannity's hair and superimposed it on my head and came and posted it in my office. And so that's why I had that in mind.
It's really a disturbing thought, but I appreciate you sharing it. Just throw a curveball out there. But the name of the book is Letters to an American Christian, and that letter writing style, it had to have been fun for you and more personal. It really does take it down to a, hey, I'm sitting down talking to somebody that's really well versed in these issues over a cup of coffee. That's the feel it has when I've been reading it.
Yeah, what I did is I tried to take the 26 most important questions that Christians ask me about political issues and then try to show how you would talk about those issues in relation to people on the left and in relation to some bad thinking on the right. You know, and it was just a lot of fun.
Well, you've got, and it's kind of split into three sections. You've got kind of the overarching meta narrative, which is a Christian view of politics and public life. that there's seven chapters there. Then part two, a Christian view on hot button issues. That's where I was just kind of going through some of those things. Small government, big government, Supreme Court interpretation. That's a big deal. Are you a strict constructionist? Are you kind of more liberal, a broad constructionist? Talking about gun legislation. I'm going to talk about that in a second. Great books, education. What about Obergefell? That's gay marriage, quote unquote, environmentalism, justice and mercy. That's in there. Nationalism in the United States. But as an example, I want to talk about Chapter 15, hitting the bullseye on gun legislation. Because you ask your average Christian, and most, listen, this is just the lay of the land. Get over it. Most, the more adept a real Christian is with the Word of God, the more conservative they tend to be politically. Those numbers bear out. Don't take it up with me. That's just facts. I don't deal with feelings. I deal with facts. But when it comes to something like gun control and gun law, you go, well, how do you kind of arrive at that from a biblical perspective? I mean, on that one myself, I'm like, well, love your neighbor as yourself. So you love your neighbor and you love yourself. And private property rights and self-defense. Some people think Jesus was a pacifist. Of course, he wasn't. Every time they deal with a Roman centurion, they don't tell him to disarm. But most people don't think about that. They just go, hey, unfettered access to guns, or you shouldn't have any guns at all.
Yeah, you know, so gun control advocates, I think, often or most of the time are very well-intentioned. And they have funny comments they make to me, like, you know, Ashford, it's hard to imagine Jesus, you know, rolling up, packing, you know, a 357 Smith & Wesson 357 long barrel.
His robe.
Yeah, and that's because he had a very specific mission, part of which we're never to fulfill. And that is he was sent to this earth to die and not resist so that he could pay for our sins. Yeah. None of us are sent to earth to pay for other people's sins.
Yeah.
So, you know, the real question is this. What kind of a world do we live in, and what kind of guidance does God give us? So we live in a world that is fallen, in which there's sin, in which there's people who could come against us with violence, right? So we have a couple of responses, very similar actually to how a nation would respond in war. You could be a pacifist, and by that we don't just mean a person who wants peace. We all want peace.
Sure.
We mean someone who says, listen, I don't think it's justified for me to use violence at all. All right? And so that's very idealistic. If we'll just lay down our weapons, the world will be a better place. That's not the world that I live in. It's not the world the Bible describes. On the other hand, you've got people who are idealists on the other side who think, if I can just find evil and use my weapons against that evil, I can eradicate it. Well, that's a pretty dumb view. You can never eradicate evil. So for gun legislation, I would mention a lot of things you just mentioned, that we live in a sinful world. The Bible never tells us that we can't defend ourselves, never told that we can't be armed. So now we're then from the theological arena, we're launched into the political arena. We live in the United States of America where it's a Second Amendment right.
Yeah.
Also, where how many people, I don't know what the numbers are, how many people own guns?
Oh, it's a massive number.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like
we have more. Actually, have more guns in America than Americans.
We had multiple break-ins in my neighborhood.
Wow.
You know, in the past few months. Well, I'm packing. I hope I never have to use it, but
yeah,
I'm packing.
Of course. Yeah.
And you know, I use the example of a Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum long barrel. That may or may not be exactly the gun that I've got.
That may or may not be exactly the gun that I have. Well, that was like Jesus. Hey, do you guys have any swords? Let me check. Yeah, we have two. Okay, that's good enough.
Yeah, you know, so a fun way to put it is I encourage people to avoid hoplophobia and hoplophilia. So,
I'm just a normal person, so you're going to have to.
Hoplophobia is the fun. I had to look this up. You know, I was looking for
that's
a fun
lie.
Word
I don't
to use.
You.
Hoplophobia is the neurotic fear of guns and gun ownership. All right.
Wow.
And I think we need to avoid that. But we also need to avoid hoplophilia, which is a neurotic obsession with firearms. We're always bragging about how we love to shoot
whatever
people. We can't wait to shoot somebody who, you know.
Don't you dare come onto my property. Yeah. I'm going to gun you down, bro.
We can avoid, you know, both of those.
What do you find in kind of the ivory tower world? And I'm not saying that to sound ugly. Theologians and the seminary world, when it comes to kind of our Christianity and our politics and living that out. I think we saw, I haven't seen as much division in the evangelical, biblically astute, biblically committed world as I did with Donald Trump's nomination and even with his presidency. And so from the outside looking in, I would say we haven't really developed a really strong theology of political involvement. So what's been the view on your side of the table in terms of the seminary world and politics and Christians in politics?
Yeah, you know, I think it actually is pretty similar to what most Americans are experiencing right now. Our country is in the throes of social, cultural, and political change. There's some currents out there that we can't stop or control,
yeah,
and that affect all of us. So we had for a while after the Cold War, we had pretty sort of agreed upon camps and issues. And all of a sudden, the world has changed quite a bit. The post-Cold War order is not the same. Mm. Globalization has been huge. It's affected people in ways positively and negatively in ways that we hadn't expected. There's a different military order than we thought. Secularization has taken hold very quickly with lightning speed, and the Obama presidency put it on hyperspeed.
Yeah.
And so all of these things combine. It's like, in March, tornado season, when you have all the warm air coming in at a fast speed against the cold air, and then all of a sudden you've got tornadoes. I think it's a great analogy with politics right now. That's what's happening. And so the church needs to do the hard work of figuring out how do we sort all this out. None of us are going to be 100% right. I'm just giving it my best shot.
Yeah.
You know? But we're going to have to work hard. I think we need to have a little bit of humility. We need to realize that, hey, maybe we could be wrong. I've been wrong about a number of things in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
You know?
Happens to all of us.
And we need to work together as a community to say, listen, how can we best provide a preview of God's coming kingdom? So that when people look at our political interaction, they'll say, you know what? That's how it's going to be one day.
Well, that should be our prophetic witness in the political realm, is when everybody's saying, well, gun control is this and racism is that. We should be the third rail in there going, okay, I'm going to bring a slightly different perspective on this, which some of you will agree with and some of you will hate, but every once in a while it's going to swerve from one side of the track to the other, and which makes people uncomfortable. So I was going to ask you, as we engage politically as Christians with our ultimate allegiance, not to the Republican Party or even to conservatism, but to biblical reality, as you write for Fox News opinion pieces and stuff like that, where do you get the most grief? Where have you run in to the most resistance from conservatives?
You know, great question. So I'll start with the left for a minute. You didn't ask that. But, you know, I do get a lot of resistance from the left, especially on moral issues. And then maybe we can answer from the right when we come back in a minute.
And from the left, because you're high and mighty trying to impose a meta-narrative that says truth is real.
Yep.
That's duh. But, and that, you know, I'm interested in that, but not for long, because that's been the same thing
for
a few decades.
Yep.
What kind of grief you get from the right? An evangelical Christian who loves Jesus Christ and is born again and understands politics. What ticks off the right when this guy speaks? We'll find out when we come back out of this.
I'm glad you asked me that.
Let's try it all together.
Call to Action Radio. Great to be with all of you as usual, and at Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, talking about a book that's available for pre-order right now on Amazon.com. It'll be out probably around the beginning of June. Letters to an American Christian, written by my good friend Dr. Bruce Ashford, who's out here at Southeastern. And what are your roles here at Southeastern? Because they're numerous and important.
Yeah, so I'm provost, and that is a Latin word that means, may I refresh the president's coffee? No. So I'm his right-hand man on
academic. I'm texting that to President Aiken as soon as we're done.
No, that just basically means I'm his right-hand man on academic stuff.
Got it.
Okay? And then I'm dean of the faculty. That means I'm a liaison from the faculty to the president. And then I'm professor of theology and culture. So what is the interface of Christian thought with art, science, politics, economics, education, all these spheres of culture?
And now you're showing up all over the place and in writing at Fox News and writing at Heritage. Is it Daily Wire? Is that where you're showing up there?
And Daily Signal.
Daily Signal.
And Daily Caller and Fox.
Got it. So was that like this beast that was welling up inside of you? And sooner or later, it was like, I have to go to the bathroom?
Listen, so when I turned 40, I had a midlife crisis. I really did.
Oh, God.
And
I turned 40.
I wasn't expecting it. And please don't make fun of me. It reminds me of middle school. And, standing in the middle of a circle. No, just kidding. And it really was, I've always felt called to write and interface with politics and public life. And I turned 40 and I was like, I am going to do it. Little did I know that as I published my first political book, One Nation Under God, we would have this 2016 election cycle. It was nuts.
Holy moly.
I wrote one article for Fox. It was well received. And the editor said, hey, we'd like you to write a little bit more. And I think the craziest moment for me, I've had several articles that went viral, but that let me kind of see what was really going on in politics. The one that the first one that went absolutely nuts viral, over a million views, was the night that Ted Cruz conceded. I wrote the article for What Evangelicals Should Do. They posted it at 11:30 at night,
wow,
right after the concession speech, and it got, I don't know, you know, thousands and thousands
because
of retweets.
Because for most of us evangelicals, Ted Cruz was our guy.
Yes.
I sat down with him twice. He was on the show twice. I mean, I loved him, appreciated him. He was much more engaging and fun and charismatic in person than he was on the stump. But anyway, what was the point of the article?
Well, the point of the article was we need to be very, very careful. The things that are candidate Trump was saying and doing, I said, this is, you need to be very, very careful. Whatever you do, I said, I'm going to probably cast a third party vote, but whatever you do, you have to make sure that it doesn't look like we're the hypocritical and bigoted special interest arm of the Republican Party, and we'll just be in wholehearted approval with whatever is served up on a platter.
Yeah.
The abuse.
Oh, that had to get ugly.
Anonymous letters at my home mailbox, email.
Really?
Emails that, you know, just all kinds of awful. So a special place in hell for people like you.
Because you might as well have changed your last name to Clinton.
Right. So that let me see how polarized things were, and that's continued. I mean, whenever I publish something outside of the consensus— what is right now the consensus.
Which is the question I asked before the break, is what do you write about as a born-again conservative, mostly conservative in political views, evangelical Christian who knows the scriptures better than 99% of the people listening to us right now? What ticks off, quote-unquote,
conservatives,
our own side?
People
what ticks
who
off conservatives?
Self-identify.
Yeah.
I'll list five issues. They're just the first five that come to mind. One is if you give any type of criticism whatsoever of Donald Trump.
Yep.
Even if it's even-handed. Hey, I like what he did here, but I don't like what he did there. Or, hey, he did something great with tax reform, but, you know, the Wormy or Stormy or whatever her name was, that's bad stuff.
Yeah.
And, or you know, or whatever it is.
Fake news!
You still have people, and people who are furious. They're not just mad. They're
oh, my goodness.
Furious with you. So that's one.
That's because, ultimately, in some way, you're attacking their idol.
Yes.
And when our idols get attacked, oh, baby, out come the claws.
That's right. Anytime you treat a person or a party as a messiah— you know, then you have an idol, and then it can the person or the party can never be questioned.
That's right.
So a second is when I question demeanor, you know, and deportment. When you have people who are being demeaning and degrading toward other people, who are lying, telling partial truths, whoever those people may be.
Donald Trump.
The first thing that I'll get back from some angry hornet conservatives is, stop being so politically correct. I'm like, no. I'm not asking political correctness. I'm asking to give other people the respect they're due as people created in the image of God.
Right.
Political correctness is hiding what I believe in order to conform to a public consensus.
Right.
Civility and respect is the opposite of that. I will tell exactly what is on my mind, but in a way that respects the other person.
Right. Yeah, and today, especially in conservative circles, you're a compromiser when you
do
that. But that's the one little post-it note that's here on my computer screen. And it's one word with three exclamation points and a line underneath it, and it's the word civility.
Yep.
It's right there.
Oh, man. It's a good. I need the reminder, man. I ought to write it on my
forehead.
Probably not my forehead because I don't have a mirror, so maybe my
I'll
hand.
Do it.
You know.
I'll take care of it.
I could write it on your forehead right now
there's
and
plenty
see
of room.
It. A third issue is immigration. And so, you know, for example, my stance is that we do need to secure the borders. Any nation needs to secure the borders, and that's a good thing to do.
And the Old Testament will paint a pretty good picture for you on that.
Yeah, we need to stop being duplicitous. If we make a law, you know, keep it. But at the same time, when we have people who are already here, especially people who aren't at fault, dreamers, who were born here or carried across the border when they were kids, we need to have mercy on these people, I think.
Yeah.
When I say something like that, which falls very much within conservatism of the past 50 years,
whammo.
Brutal, ugly stuff.
Yeah.
Race. There are some conservatives who cannot bring themselves or find themselves to admit that white conservatives have ever done or said anything wrong at any point in the past 100 years.
If you give any quarter to the notion of institutionalized racism—
Right.
To even try to understand what that means or any notion of white privilege, as soon as you say that, and because hey, you know what? I live in a predominant white culture. We don't even think about the culture as being white. You know you're in the dominant culture when you don't,
when you don't even think about it. That's exactly right.
The culture. And if you even engage the conversation that I'm going to listen to this and I'm going to give this some thought, and I'm willing to concede that maybe I don't see all of this oh my gosh, you're the wicked witch of the West, man. You're a turncoat. Yep.
I will say what's encouraging is on the other side of the coin, there are lots of especially younger conservatives who are legitimately conservative in the American sense of the word who love it when we write on these race issues.
That's good.
Then the fifth issue is morality. You know, I think there are many conservatives.
You tick off people on the right when you talk about morality?
Yeah. Isn't that an irony? Yeah, I mean, 30 years
that
ago.
That ticks me off.
Listen. So,
I mean, say that.
Within the past 2 years, a large number of conservatives have done a 180 at such a blinding speed that we've got social, cultural, and political whiplash.
Yeah.
And that is people who argue that morality does matter for public office for the past 50 years all of a sudden say that it doesn't matter for public office or doesn't matter much at all. And that's happened a lot in the past 2 years. And I'm okay with somebody voting for somebody who has been immoral in certain ways. I mean, all of us have been immoral in certain ways.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that. We're just saying that it is one aspect and an important aspect. And I'm not talking specifically about Donald Trump. I mean, he is a person, but there are lots of them. Roy Moore, I mean, plenty of people on the left. I mean, good heavens, we've seen plenty of those. If a person's wife or multiple wives cannot trust him really at any point over the course of his entire life, why would we think that we could trust that person to keep their promises
to us?
Well,
how do you say
you at least have to ask the question.
Of course. How do you say it doesn't matter that Donald Trump cheated on his first wife with his second wife and cheated on his second wife with his third wife? How can you say that doesn't matter? Of course it goes to character. Of course it does. Now, can people change over time? Absolutely. Do we get perhaps a little wiser as we go older? I certainly hope so.
Yeah, and especially if somebody's forthcoming about it and you know, repentant about it. I mean, there's always grace and mercy with Christians.
Right.
And I'm not saying you can't ever cast a vote for somebody who's been immoral. I mean, good grief.
Well,
it's always a choice between two immoral people, us included.
Yeah, I don't think pragmatism in this particular world, as broken as it is a sin. So I'm going to assume, well, I know some people on the seminary here that did not vote for Donald Trump and voted for a third party or voted for and wrote somebody in. I did vote for Donald Trump. But I tell you what, I'm not going to break my fellowship with you or Danny Akin or any other person, any other of my brothers at Southeastern, because of the president of the United States.
Yeah.
I don't care who he is.
Yeah. I mean, it's nuts what's happening. I have two long-term friends that I've got, one of whom defriended me on Facebook merely because of what I said about how we should vote.
Wow.
And then another of whom, you know, curses me on a regular basis, right? I've always thought a strong Christian and a conservative guy.
Wow.
I mean, the emotions are so high right now.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, and I think a lot of that's fear-based.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't been given a spirit of fear. I don't know about you, but I haven't been given one.
I often wonder if it's a temptation for conservatives, because we know we have truth in the Bible, to sometimes then confuse that with our own opinions being truth.
Holy cow.
I think all of us do that. I'm not saying everyone else does and I don't.
Some very smart Christian, and I can't remember who it is, I'd love to be able to give him credit, several years ago said, Steve, always be suspicious of yourself. Always.
Because
that's just me realizing, like Paul did, that the old man is still there.
Especially those of us like you and me who are paid to give our opinion.
Yeah.
We have to be careful. I think God holds us to a higher standard.
I haven't really figured that part
out. Actually, you know, I don't get paid to write opinion pieces, but I do get paid to
teach
at seminary and write.
Like who do you want to read letters? We're talking to Dr. Bruce Ashford here on Theology Thursday, and he's a big wig out here at seminary. But the thing I love about Bruce the most is that he loves the Lord. He loves other people. He loves the country, and he's willing to talk about these issues and unafraid to do it. And you get all the garbage that goes with it. But Letters to an American Christian is the book coming out in June. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, here's who you can give it to. You can give it to folks on the left because it gives a kind and unoffensive persuasion for people to take a track to the right.
Yep.
You can also give it to young people on the right or older people on the right, any American, to just try to say, hey, listen, how can our Christian principles drive our conservatism rather than the political winds of the day?
That's exactly
You can
right.
pre-order it on Amazon.com.
Letters to an American Christian. Letters to an American Christian is the name of the book, Dr. Bruce Ashford. You got a cool middle name, Riley.
Yeah.
That's kind of the playful, dangerous side of Bruce Ashford. You say Bruce Ashford, he sounds kind of respectable, but Bruce Riley Ashford.
I've got a Scotch name, Bruce, an Irish name, Riley, and an English name, Ashford.
So the only thing that constrains that is the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's
Otherwise,
right.
Otherwise, you'd just be some drunk jerk walking
seriously.
around. It's great having you here. Thanks so much for being here. Letters to an American Christian coming out in June, but you can pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. I've also got the link up at Facebook, my Facebook page. This is Steve Noble. It's Called to Action Radio. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.